Namaste, Om Shanti, and welcome to the IT Wing Conference of the Brahma Kumaris Rajyoga Education Research Foundation. We are living in unprecedented times, a time of change and challenges. We are facing challenges on personal, professional, and societal levels. One often wonders, how do we face these challenges? How do we come out of these challenges? What do we require? One of the raising issues that people now face is the mental health, and it is natural for me to be concerned about my own mental health, physical health, and those of my loved ones. In these times of challenges, how do I build my strength? What are the virtues of resilience? How do I protect the mental and physical health of myself and my loved ones? These are the questions that will be answered in this e-conference, Awakening to the Call of Time. It is indeed our pleasure and an honor to have Dadiratan Mohiniji with us. Dadiratan Mohiniji is the Joint Administrative Head of the Brahma Kumaris. She came to the Brahma Kumaris at a tender age of 9, and all through her life she has been a teacher of meditation. She is an accomplished yogi and she is known for her enchanting simplicity. Let us listen to blessings from Dadiji on the occasion of this conference.
Om Shanti. Apni dainik vyast dinchariya mein se samay nikal kar duniya ke vibhinn hisson se is karyakram mein judne ke liye hum aapka hardik abhinandan karte hain. हालांकि इस गंभीर वैश्विक आपदा के समय में हर किसी से व्यक्तिगत तौर पर भेंट कर पाना संभव नहीं है, लेकिन कंप्यूटर और सूचना तकनीक की सहायता से आपसे मिलकर प्रसन्नता हो रही है. आईटी ने हमेशा इन टाइम यानी समय पर दुनिया की मदद की है. जीवन के नई जीवन की नई चुनौतियों का सामना करने के लिए भी आईटी हम सभी को तैयार रहने में तत्पर रहा है, और इस तरह यह हमेशा तत्पर प्रगति की आवश्यक सुविधा देता है. ब्रह्मा कुमारीज के लिए भगवान का संदेश और प्रेम सभी तक पहुंचाने में आईटी ने सदैव मदद की है. दूसरी पॉइंट है, जितना दुनिया उथल पथल बदलाव एवं जीवन को अलग दृष्टिकोण से देखने के परिवर्तन से गुजर रही है, उतना ही ये समय है अपने अंदर गहराई से देखकर अपने अंदर अंतरक आत्मा को जगाने, अंदर की आवाज सुनकर उद्देश्य सहित जीवन जीने की कला, एक सरल स्वस्थ और शांतिपूर्ण जीवन जिसे हम योगी जीवन कहते हैं. योगी का अर्थ अपने आसपास के सभी चीजों को छोड़कर जंगल में जाना नहीं है, बल्कि योगी का अर्थ है जो अपने मन को कंट्रोल करे और जीवन के विभिन्न पहलुओं को प्राथमिकता देने के लिए एक जागरूक आधार बने, जो जीवन जीने के लिए मौलिक रूप से महत्वपूर्ण है. एक जीवन शैली का निर्माण करना और उसे अपनाना जो सच्चाई मूल्यों सिद्धांतों और अनुशासन पर आधारित हो, ऐसी जीवन शैली जो न सिर्फ हमें स्वयं पर नियंत्रण की कला सिखाती है, साथ ही हमें जीवन की सभी चुनौतियों का सामना करने और निराकरण करने की शक्ति और साहस भी देती है। हमें प्रेम, करुणा और एकजुटता की शक्तियाँ प्रदान करती हैं, जिससे हम अपनी यात्रा में दूसरों की मदद करने में भी सक्षम हो। इस सम्मेलन के अगले दो दिनों में हमने आपके लिए इन चीजों को बेहतर ढंग से समझने में मदद करने के लिए एक कार्यक्रम बनाया है और हमें उम्मीद है कि कार्यक्रम के अंत तक आपके भीतर की व्यक्तित्व शक्ति को फिर से जगाने और हमारे मूल गुणों को समझने में अनेक तरीकों से आपकी मदद करेंगे। इसलिए जैसा कि यह कहा जाता है, जब हमारे भीतर प्रेम और शांति होंगी, तभी हमने चारों ओर उस प्रेम और शांति को दे पाएंगे और जीवन में आनंद का अनुभव कर पाएंगे। इसके साथ मैं आप सभी को आपके भविष्य प्रकाशों में सफलता की शुभकामनाएं देती हूँ। हल्के रहो, सहज रहो, तब आप जीवन में सुखी रहेंगे। ओम शांति शांति शांति।
थैंक यू दादीजी फॉर योर ब्लेसिंग्स। इट वॉज अ प्लेजर हैविंग यू हियर विद अस। To learn the art and science of inner resilience during current times, we need guidance. And today, we have several of these people who are accomplished yogis, who have gone through a great deal, who have faced challenges in their face, and often done that with a smile on their face. Can we also do it? That's the whole purpose of this conference. On this first day of the IT Wing Conference of the Brahma Kumaris, I welcome you all once again. I take this opportunity to introduce our first speaker to you. Our first speaker is P.K. Charlie. Charles Hoggs is his full name and he is the coordinator of the Brahma Kumaris activities in Australia. Charles is the national coordinator of the Brahma Kumaris centers in Australia. He has traveled to more than 80 countries and participated in public conferences and the Brahma Kumaris events. He is known for his wisdom and his simplicity. And he will speak about a new way of thinking. Most of us are dealing challenges on the inner front as well. Do we know how to calm our minds? Do we know how to stay positive? Do we know how to create positive thoughts? It requires a new approach, a new way of thinking, awakening to a new way of thinking.
It is really my great pleasure to be a part of this online conference, Awakening to the Call of Time. My name is Charlie and I live in Australia. And in my life I've had the great fortune to travel to all corners of this world. And over the past few years, wherever I've traveled, I hear the same song being sung. It's the same chorus everywhere. It seems that people looking at their countries, their cities, their places, they feel it's becoming more and more chaotic, more and more dysfunctional, more and more negative, more and more selfish. And yet at the same time, I'm finding a worldwide awareness that what we see out there is the result of the world in here. The outer world is just a reflection of our inner world. And I feel that the collective mind of humanity, when it's full of greed, then we see this materialistic culture which has taken over our planet and is destroying our world around us. When the collective mind of humanity is really full of ego, it's like we see a world full of self-interest and a lack of care and love for each other. When we see the collective mind of humanity full of anger, we see a world of so much conflict and differences and violence. And I think that many people are now awakening to a new way of thinking. We're beginning to see that just as when the collective mind of humanity is so negative, what we are seeing outside is a very negative world. But when the collective mind of humanity becomes more positive, that will also reflect in the world around us. If the collective mind becomes more peaceful, when we as individuals taste peace, this is going to flow into our family, into our networks, into our world. When the collective mind starts to feel more self-value and self-respect, then that most essential quality to create a positive world of respect will be seen more in our family life, in our working life, and in our world. And when the collective mind of humanity tastes what I often feel is the first human right, to feel more love in life, then that's also going to create a world where there's a much more love seen in our relationships and around us. And so we live in this extraordinary world, this incredible world. 7.8 billion people, 195 countries, 6,500 languages, numerous rich and magnificent cultures, and complex political systems, economic systems, social systems, family systems. But that is the world outside. That is the seen world. There's another world, which I call the unseen world. It's our thought system. And I would say our thought system, this unseen world, is even more influential than the seen world outside of us. And we're seeing a world with so many problems, so many issues. And we're seeing governments, you know, United Nations organizations, spending literally trillions of dollars to fix all the problems out there. But I often see it like a doctor. A patient comes with a rash on their hand. They give an ointment for the rash. But they don't go to the problem, the seed of the problem. Where has that rash been fed from? Where did that rash originate from? And what I see is that all the problems in the seen world begin in the unseen world, the thought system of humanity. And when the thought system of humanity is absolutely polluted with self-interest, greed, hatred, anger, fear, and a lot more, then when it flows into the seen world, we get this chaotic world in which we're living. And I feel that this conference is awakening to the call of time, that unless we as individuals take responsibility for our unseen world, our thinking, that's polluting me, how I feel, my body, my family and the world around me. Unless we take responsibility, I don't think our seen world, our chaotic world out there is going to change much. And this is why, you know, I am fascinated by the human mind. I find it extraordinary that most of us go to university, go to school, we study so much. But how much do we really know or learn about our mind and how it works? We learn about the external world, the seen world, but we don't learn about our internal world, our unseen world. And this is really, I think, the seed of all our issues at the moment. And I often feel my whole life meets in my mind, my thoughts, my feelings, my reactions, my memories, my relationships. My whole life meets in my mind. How important is my mind? And it's my mind that holds the energy of thought, this unseen world which is influencing absolutely everything on this planet. And when we look at the human mind, it's incredible. Some scientists say that in a waking day we create 70,000 unique thought patterns. I often quote that figure, but I have no idea how they counted them. But it doesn't matter because we know we all think a lot. Other scientists say that we can speak 125 words a minute, but we think about 500. I think, as you know, that when you're talking to somebody, how many jobs is your mind doing at that time? In psychology, they say that the mind is aware on 7 different levels at any given moment. What an extraordinary instrument. I'm speaking to you. I'm thinking about what I will say next. You know, I'm listening to things happening around me. You know, your mind processes on so many different levels. And in a way, I think the mind is like a thought factory. It is constantly going 24/7. For your body, you will eat, you will rest, you will exercise. Your mind just goes 24/7 non-stop, and it's pumping thoughts into the atmosphere, influencing the seen world. And this is why I think this awakening online conference is so important, because it's going to make all of us aware that my unseen world, the world I often think is private, is actually not private. It is influencing the atmosphere around me. And the incredible thing about a human thought is that it's beyond time and space. Light travels at 186,000 miles a second. Thought is instant. You think a thought, wherever you sit, it can be on the other side of the world at the same time. So we're starting to unpack the extraordinary nature of thought power. And I often think of our internal world like a tree. My thought world, if I can put it, this unseen world is like a tree. A tree has a seed, then roots, a trunk, branches, and then leaves, twigs and leaves. And the way I look at my inner world is that the leaves are like the thoughts, but the leaves are the end product on a tree. What is feeding the leaves? It's the branches, the trunk, the roots, and even the seed. And so if we really want a new way of thinking, we've got to go to the essence of my thought tree and see what is the most influential things on my thinking and my feeling. Where is the seed, and what is the seed and the roots that are really influencing my thinking? Because when I bring change there, I can change my unseen world, and my unseen world is going to start to influence the seen world. So let's begin at the top of the tree, at the leaves. The leaves are like my thoughts, and the twigs are like my thought streams or my feelings. My experience, myself, and talking to so many people, that often we react to certain thoughts we have. We have chronic negative thoughts about myself, about others. So I try to pluck them from my mind. And sometimes with a little bit of attention, it's possible. But the law says, pluck out one thought and 10 more grow. And I've talked to many people who really genuinely want to improve their thinking. But they find they fix one little thought system there, and so many other thought systems begin to grow. And what I began to observe when I began my own spiritual journey was that my mind is like a sacred space. My mind is my world, but there's gateways into my mind. My eyes, I see through my eyes, I see bad behavior. I let it through my eyes into my mind, drives my thinking. I hear negative words and criticisms. I let it through my ears, drives my thinking. So we who are so educated, we who have so much knowledge, sometimes are like slaves in our own mind. The external world is driving my thinking. And that's why one of the greatest problems today is overthinking. We can't stop to the point we can't even sleep. So let's now go down. What is beginning to feed my thoughts? I would say the branches are feeding the leaves on the tree. The branches are my mental and emotional thought patterns that actually begin to drive a lot of thinking also. There's two main branches, I would say, in my thought tree. One is the past, dwelling on the past, and the other is having anxious thoughts about the future. And these are very powerful branches in my tree of consciousness. And you know, some psychologists say that 70% of our thinking is about the past, dwelling, ruminating on what happened, how I've been treated. And today I'd say because the future is so uncertain, there's increasing anxiety and thoughts about the future. So they're producing a lot of thoughts. But there's many, many sub-branches, many mental and emotional patterns which are feeding more leaves and more thoughts. Sometimes my perfectionist nature, you know, where unless things are perfect, I feel disappointed. I have these unrealistic expectations. And because we're rarely perfect, we feel permanently disappointed with myself and others around me. Sometimes there's like the pattern of paranoia, where I start to read meaning into what people say and what happens around me. I read this unusual meaning. And so that also feeds so much thought. Or I have these video reels, you know. It's like through my third eye I take a film of my day and all the mistakes I made and the failures I had. You know, it's recorded in my memory track, or even other people. I take a video of all the mistakes and failures of them. And that begins to run in the eye of my mind. And so many numerous mental and emotional thought patterns we have. But what's feeding my thought patterns, my mental, emotional thought patterns, which are feeding the thought tree? I would say the trunk. And the trunk is like my subconscious. My subconscious is the recording of all my past actions, behaviors, and experiences are beautifully recorded in my subconscious. And Freud once said that he believed that 80 to 90% of our behavior is fed by my subconscious. I'm sure you've had the experience that you've woken up in a morning and you said to yourself, today I'm going to be so kind and so loving to those around me. And in 2 minutes, a behavior, a feeling comes inside so angry or so negative, and you wonder, who's in control here? I want to be loving and kind, and yet there's something in me which is making me behave differently. This is my subconscious. So we've gone from our thoughts to our branches to the trunk, my subconscious. But let's go to the roots. And we're starting to go to the seed of influence of my thinking. And I would say the roots is my sense of identity. Who am I? This is a massive influence on my thinking. My sense of self, my sense of identity, my sense of self-awareness. And when I look at me and my sense of self-awareness, I see three personalities inside of me. And I would say two of them create chronic negative thinking. And when these personalities rule my inner world, they influence my whole thinking tree. One of them starts to create a sense of peace and self-respect. And these two negative personalities are born out of my temporary identity. When I start to think of myself as a temporary body and all the labels of my body, it produces the first personality, which is the eye of arrogance or the eye of superiority. And when this eye rules my thought system, my thought tree, I compare with others and I begin to think, I am better, I know more, I am right. And when it comes into my feelings, that's when I feel so easily insulted, disrespected, not valued, excluded, sensitive, and a whole lot more. And so what we're beginning to see that when my false identity, and what is ego? Ego is an attachment to a temporary or false sense of who I am. And so when ego is the seed of my tree, it grows a trunk. I say the roots of my tree, it grows a trunk, branches and thoughts which are distorted and dysfunctional. But often ego is a cover for the second eye, which is the eye of inferiority or the eye of lack of self-respect. And when this eye is ruling in my system, I compare and I think that others are better, others know more, others don't love me, others don't value me, others don't respect me. And when it comes into my feelings, I feel hopeless, inadequate, unworthy, inferior, and I would say depressed. And so sow the seed, the roots of a false identity, and it grows into influencing all parts of my inner world. The third eye is the original eye, I, the soul. And so when I start to identify with my permanent self, the self that's lived before this body and will live after this body, I, the soul, the point of life energy that sits in the front of the brain. And when I start to identify and experience who I am, I release my natural state, which is peace. And I often say that the aim of meditation is not to be peaceful. That's the result. The aim of meditation is to know and experience who I am. Install the right identity in the roots of my thinking tree, and it's going to influence my whole tree with a lovely, calm, peaceful, and pure quality of energy. But let's even go to the seed of the tree. The seed which influences the roots, the trunk, the branches and the leaves. And I would say that is love and belonging. And love and belonging is crucial to healthy thinking. And I feel that there's three sources of love in life. They are from me, from God, and from others. For most of us, not much love coming from me, for me. And in terms of God, I think that many of us have faith in God, a belief in God, but wouldn't really say we feel loved by God, feel that deep, you know, belonging and love. And so my main source of love is my family and friends. If there's a loss, if there's a conflict, it's like my whole world goes into upheaval. What is spirituality? What is the awakening we need in the self? To build two things. To have a loving relationship with myself as a soul and a loving relationship with God as the Supreme Soul. And I find that when I install that feeling of love and belonging, and for me, it's when I, the soul, look through the eye of my mind, I see the radiant jewel of the divine, of God. And when I feel loved, that love enters the core of my being. This is the absolute seed of change within my whole thought tree. This love begins to nurture a whole different feeling inside of me. And so what this conference is going to do, this online conference, is going to take me through all the layers of the tree, from my thoughts into my mental and emotional patterns. And then it's going to go deeper into my subconscious, but then even deeper to my sense of self and my sense of who I belong to. And when I really learn to redevelop a loving relationship with myself and a loving relationship with God, that energy starts to influence my thought tree. And then that thought energy, my inner world, will start to influence my family, my workplace, and the world around me. And so this is really a wonderful beginning. And I feel that if we can stick with all the sessions, we will learn how to really awaken a new type of thinking in my mind. So different seed and different roots is going to influence each and every part of my life, I would say, in a very, very positive and beneficial way. So I'd really like to wish you all the best for a meaningful and wonderful online event. And before I leave you, I want to invite all of you for a few minutes of quiet reflection. And I'm just going to offer a few thoughts. And as I do, I would really appreciate if you can sit still, wherever you may be, put down phones, put aside distractions and be present, because the call of time is that unless we learn about ourselves, unless we begin to change ourselves, really our world around us is not going to change. So let us sit very quietly. And observe the world around us, a world in upheaval. Time is calling us to look behind the outer world, and for each one of us to look to our inner world. the unseen world of thoughts and feelings, and begin to see that our collective inner world is influencing our outer world and creating what we are seeing. If I want to contribute to a better world, I need to take responsibility for my thinking. I need to create a new thinking. To begin this new thinking, visualize your permanent self, the original self, I, the eternal soul. Just a tiny spark of life energy sitting lightly in the forehead. In this position of sovereignty in my inner world, just feel yourself letting go, stepping back, withdrawing from all the labels, the temporary labels of your body. I am a peaceful soul. Feel yourself lighter and lighter in the forehead. And in this state of self-awareness, begin to observe your mind cooling down. You feeling more settled. And my sense of love and respect for myself beginning to grow. When I sow the seed of self-awareness, it influences my thoughts. My thoughts cool down. And in this state of peace, I sit in front of the divine. I sit in front of God. And allow myself to be loved. Feel this love entering the core of your being. And watch how your whole inner world feels so still, so silent, so sweet. It's like I have what I need. I feel true love and belonging. The more I live in this place of self-awareness and connected to the lover of the soul, the Supreme, my whole thought energy becomes more positive, more pure, more light. And this thought energy influences my health, influences how I feel, influences my family relationships, and influences the world around me. This is now the call of time to change my thoughts to contribute to a better world.
Thank you so much, Charlie, for those insights. Think slow, think less. Seems possible, isn't it? And after all, our inherent positivity has not gone out anywhere. It lies within. If we seek out on the inner journey, we could always tap into its resources. And this new way of thinking, I believe, will transform the way we live our lives too. Thank you once again, Charlie, for sharing those insights with us. If it had been a normal circumstance, most of you would be visiting the Brahma Kumaris headquarters to attend this conference in the lush green mountains of Aravallis. But nonetheless, we have brought the same tranquil atmosphere to your homes. We brought the Raja Yogis who create that atmosphere. We have understood that it is the human mind that creates the environment around. We have understood that the yogis have created such an aura around them that going in their presence itself helps us soothe our minds. Why does it happen? Can we all do that? Is it possible to learn the same things? And with the same aim, in this conference we have also made it a part to learn Raja Yoga meditation. Many of our friends who would visit Mount Abu have often taken this opportunity to introduce themselves to Raja Yoga. Meditation, as we all simply call it, is an art that we can all master.
My name is Surinder Payal and I work with IBM. Let me share my experience with Brahma Kumari. So my journey started last year when I was exploring about meditation. And in fact, I have been to different places to learn about meditation. However, I was still not satisfied because sitting in a silence for a long, it was not at all easy. So finally, through one of my friends, I have connected with one of the BK, Savithi Didi. She taught me 3 days program where I learned Raja Yoga meditation. She also sent me an invitation to join one of the largest IT conference which happened last year in Mount Abu. So I was so lucky to join IT conference in Mount Abu because I got an opportunity to directly hear from multiple spiritual leaders like Balabhai, Surajbhai, Shivani Didi, Aruna Behen, and of course some other spiritual leader. And I was also very lucky to see Dadi Janki face to face. So during the session, I learned multiple things. The first thing I learned is Raja Yoga meditation. And trust me, this is one of the easy meditation which anybody can do. It is a great way to directly, connect with the Supreme Power. So apart from that, during the session, I also learned about power of subconscious mind. I also learned about neuroplasticity, and thanks to Balabhai for that session. I also learned about how to manage your anxiety, your negative thoughts. I got more clarity on karmas. So net-net, it was a very, very fruitful session for me, and after coming back to home, the first thing I did is I started my Raja Yoga meditation, and I still do it almost every day. If for some reason I miss it, I still don't forget to use 1 minute traffic control, which is very, very useful. Apart from that, I have got multiple benefit. So professionally, there are a couple of benefit I got. My productivity got increased. I have more clarity with respect to my work. And of course, I stay very calm whenever there is a tough situation, be it, personal or professional. And also, through this session, I have also brought changes in my food habit. So one thing I did is I left eating non-vegetarian. So eating non-veg is a kind of a big decision for me, and thanks to Shivani Bhatt for explaining about the entire science. And of course my sleep habit is changed, my food habit is changed. In fact, whenever we prepare food for our family, we don't forget to play any spiritual song. We don't forget to charge water. So these are small things, which I brought into my daily practice. And trust me, there are a lot of benefit. And with respect to health, there are two benefit I have seen. The one is there is a drastic improvement in my blood pressure, which is more stable, under control. And it used to be, very high. In terms of overall health, I can find more energy. So, these are the journey as of now, and it's just a start. I'm in the first step, and there is a long way to go. Thank you.
योगी जीवन जी कर देखो योगी जीवन जी कर देखो तन मन शीतल बन जाएगा तन मन शीतल बन जाएगा योगी जी कर देखो योगी जीवन जी कर देखो बुद्धि ईश्वर से जुड़ जाए योग वही कहलाता है सुख हो जी कर देखो।
Shanti. It's so wonderful to see you all join in this three-day journey towards bliss, happiness, and inner peace. This is my third IT conference at the Brahma Kumaris. The first two were in the beautiful settings of Shanti One in Mount Abu. This one is digital. And it is such a reflection of the times that we are in. We are physically locked up and limited in so many ways. But there has been never a better time to experience the freedom of connecting with our inner self. And there has been no better time for inner transformation. The external situation is something we don't have any control over. We don't know when this situation is going to come to an end or how bad it can become. But how we are internally is absolutely in our control. These times have given us such a great opportunity to take a pause and reflect on our lives. Have we all lived a life that we wanted to live? Do I have the inner resilience to withstand turbulent times? Are my thoughts pure and positive? Am I having a positive impact on the people around us, the community that I live in, and the planet that I'm very much a part of? Given this lockdown, we may not be able to respond to the needs of our community and the planet. But the one journey that we all can undertake is the journey of self-transformation. Be the change that you want to be. Only when we can transform ourselves can the journey of transformation and healing begin for the planet. So let us use the next 3 days to strengthen our journey of self-transformation. During my earlier two retreats, I learned such simple yet powerful techniques to manage the inner self. I once again look forward to reaffirming these learnings and recharging myself. I wish to express my gratitude to all the teachers and the volunteers who put this together. And I wish you all a transformative 3 days. Om Shanti.
As a part of meditation lessons, we have 5 masters who will impart the basic lessons of meditation. Since it is the part of the conference, I would introduce you to the first speaker who will deliver the first lesson. We have Sister Radhika with us, who is a postgraduate in psychology, and she has been a meditation teacher for more than 20 years of her life. She will talk about the first and basic lesson of meditation, about this primordial question of who am I, our real identity. Over to Sister Radhika.
Om Shanti. So today, now I'm going to start the first class of meditation, recognizing your own spiritual identity. It is so important that I take care of myself now. I'm not saying that, you know, this being selfish, that, you know, it's not about being selfish, that I don't care about anybody around me. No, I need to, when I say I have to take care of myself, let me just put it across to you. Let me put across a question to you. Suppose I tell you, sit back and think about yourself. I'll just tell you, just think about yourself. And you do sit back and you start thinking about yourself, right, for a while. And then I ask you, okay, can you tell me what you were thinking about? And I might ask you, okay, you were thinking about yourself. So were you thinking about your 2 lungs and 2 kidneys and your intestines and your heart and your eyes and your nose? You say, not at all, sister. What are you speaking? Why would I think about my organs? Yeah. So I said, no, you said you were thinking about yourself. I said, no, I was thinking about myself, my feelings, my fear, my anxiety, my understanding about life. What is it? My future is going to be. What am I doing? My family. I haven't thought about my organs and all that. For a very normal, you know, people around, if you ask them to think about themselves, they never think about the organs or the body. That's exactly why I have to understand who am I really. And for all you know, you can ask in any language all over the world, nobody says I body. Nobody says that. You say Telugu, English, Hindi. These are 3 languages I know. In that you never say, you know, Ma Sharir, Nenu Shariramo, I body. my body, na shariramo, mera sharir. It's always referred to something as something that, that belongs to me. Like I am opposite, like I am separate, not opposite, I'm separate from this and I'm the owner and this is my possession. Like for example, you can take this mobile, right? And when you take this mobile and I just say, this is my mobile. You say, sister, it's yours, fine, no question about that. Now, I own it, I possess it, I use it. Right? Am I the mobile phone? No. I own it. This is something that belongs to me. I'm not the phone. Yeah? And this is destructible. It can work for some time, it might go. So, I'm not the mobile. In the same way, when I see this body, I say, my body. I own it. I possess it. I use it. Am I the body? No. I have a body. See, if I burn my finger, I'll call out with pain. No, it's really painful. It's burning. You would see if someone dies, they, in different religions, do different ceremonies. So you would burn, you would bury. Nobody would say, stop it, don't do this to me. Nobody says that. So there's someone who says this is paining, this is burning, this is good, this is bad, don't treat me this way, I feel unhappy, I feel happy. The one who responds, gives us responses, and the one who experiences is not there. This very first lesson I think I must have had when I was a kid. When I was 3, my great-grandfather died. I've never seen him walk. He was always on the bed. And my grandmother would take care of him. My grandmother was his daughter-in-law. It seems when he died, the ceremony had not begun. They haven't taken him and placed him wherever he had to be placed. All that ceremony had not begun. But my daughter, my grandmother was crying and crying. And it seems I kept on going to her and asking her why she's crying. And it seems my grandmother would continuously give me the same reply. Your great-grandfather is gone. Your great-grandfather is gone. And it seems I kept asking the same question again and again. Who's gone? Who's gone? And she kept telling the same answer. It seems my aunts pulled me away and my mother, they pulled me away. Because the thing is, I wouldn't understand because I would still see him lying down on the bed like he used to always. You know, he was paralyzed. So he was always on the bed. So I can't understand when she's saying he's gone because I can still see him there. There are so many chemicals in this world that we can preserve a body and keep it. We can really keep it. This is someone we love. We can keep it in the house as it is and watch it every day. Nobody does that. Some people don't even bring the body inside the house. They put it outside and they finish all the ceremony outside itself. So the question is, the thing is, if that is the one whom I was connected to all this life, why am I not preserving it in my house? And even though I can see that body right in front of me, why am I saying he's gone? Who is gone? The one who talks to me through the body is gone. The one who gave me these qualities and experiences through the body is gone. That is why when people come and someone dies, they only talk about qualities. They never come up there and say, oh my God, what a lovely nose he had. Nobody talks like that. That is not good. If somebody talks about any physical attributes, you talk about, oh, what a lovely person he was. He was so good. He was so supportive. These were his last words. They all talk about qualities. The attitude, his personality, his contribution to the world. It's all about something that it's not visible in any part of the body. I mean, it's not connected to the body at all. And that's exactly why you can't do any surgery or you can't give any medicine to any part of your body so that you can think great, feel great, and do great. There's absolutely no surgery at all. That suddenly I want to think positive. Somebody was telling me, I wish there was a surgery, sister. I'll get it done and all my negative thinking would go and I'll start thinking positive. I said, if such a surgery would exist, I think everybody would go and get it done without any problem. isn't it? So no organ, anything that you do in this body is not going to change my attitude and my tendencies and my personality. So where do all these qualities and attitude and thoughts and feelings emerge from? Where do they come from? Now, the people would say it's coming from the brain. Now, brain is also a lump of flesh. Right? It is like a computer. Of course, it's a very complicated organ. It's got so many. I mean, a professional doctor would tell you that what all that it can do and how great the organ is. But the thing is, however great it is, if it's a computer, it's got a whole lot of mechanisms and capabilities, there has to be a programmer, no? And programmer is who you are. So we all have the same brains. Now let us say you take Einstein's brain and put it in your brain. You're not going to become that intelligent. It doesn't work like that. The brain itself is not a great thing. How someone used it. And who is that someone is the programmer. The programmer is the energy. In this body, with its organs, is matter. Who am I? Am I the matter or am I the energy? Matter can be destroyed and turned, transformed into any form. Energy can either be created or destroyed. It's eternal. You can compare it to a car and a driver. Am I the car or am I the driver? If there's been an accident, someone is has been drinking quite a little bit and there's been an accident and you see that the car just, did something that another person got hurt. So would they keep the car in a prison or the driver in the prison? The driver, no? You can't blame the car. Oh my God, this car is so bad. How did it, cause this accident? No, the driver. They'll call the driver and say, why were you driving it like that? So if you compare this body to a car, the one who is making this body move is the soul, the driver, the point of light right behind your forehead. That is why there is a ritual that as soon as you go to a temple, you should apply the tilak here to remind yourself that you are a soul, because God doesn't see your car. He doesn't see your body. He sees you, that is the soul. And they say, leave your slippers outside. Don't take your shoes inside. You should leave it outside. Because all the slippers and shoes represent, it's all made with leather, that is skin. It's compared to skin. So they say, leave your skin outside. They say, leave your body outside. We can't literally leave our body outside. So we leave our slippers and shoes outside. Just with that understanding that God, I'm leaving my body outside and I'm coming and meeting you as a soul. And I break a coconut. And why do I have to break a coconut? Because the outside is a shell, that is a body. And what is inside is a white part. The coconut is who I am, the soul. And God, what can I give you from this shell, this body? Can I give you my car, my house, my money? What will you do with that? No? So I'm giving my devotion, my dedication, my love for you. So that's what they take the coconut water and they do like this. This is what I offer to you. I can't give you anything from here. So this whole understanding that I am a soul. I don't have a soul. I have a body. But I am a soul. This is the first, the whole meditation stands on this premise that I am a soul. The first step. I am a soul. I don't have a soul. I am a soul. A point of light right behind my forehead. Yeah, you can't see with these physical eyes because the soul is a non-physical entity. It's a spiritual being. And how do you know that you're a soul? Because you know it. You're thinking, you're feeling, you're understanding. Yeah? And this is not a work. How do you say, where do thoughts come from? I mean, it doesn't come from a lung or a brain or anything. How come I think so different from you? It's the same kind of a brain with cerebellum, whatever, same components. How come you're thinking different and I'm thinking so different? How come you can do such great job and, have such great personality and why somebody else doesn't? So it's not the brain. It is the soul that determines it. The soul is a point of light. like how you have the, you know, when you go to a temple or anywhere, they always give you chandan, top light, cool. Even in homes when you have some ceremonies or something like that, they always give you chandan, top light. And the meaning is a thing that you are a soul, but chandan, the sandalwood paste, represents the coolness of the soul. That is the original nature of the soul. Any soul in this whole world, German or American or Ethiopian, wherever, all souls are originally cool. Can we be angry throughout the whole day? Even if we try, we cannot. We come back to peace. Oh my God, why did I unnecessarily, you know, say all that? Why did I get into that conversation at all? It's unnecessary. I can get angry, I can get irritated, I can get all perturbed and frustrated and come back to peace. Why am I doing this? Because peace is my nature. You know, the soul's nature is peace. When a child is born, you know, we have this a course, it's called developmental psychology. They just study the whole process of the child from the time the child is born to the time when the child grows up. So they say, what are all the signs, you know? So they say once the child is like 2 months or whatever, the child is able to recognize the parent and smile and reciprocate and respond, you know. Nowhere is written by the time the child is 3, it will show the traits of anger. And when it's 3 months old, it will show some jealousy. These are not the traits which you have to look for. The beginning is always very positive. Like, if a better way to put it across to you, it's like, you know, let's say our body temperature, it's like, I don't know what is the right temperature, it's 98 point something is a normal temperature. But even if you get to 99, you don't feel really good. You don't feel very comfortable. You feel a little fatigue. You feel like lying down, you know. So it's going beyond what is normal, say, you know, that you don't feel good. There's something wrong. In the same way, the temperature of the soul is love, peace, happiness, purity, strength, knowledge, bliss. These are all the 7 beautiful qualities that the soul is originally made of. Little bit love you get, you feel so comfortable. Anger, you don't feel comfortable. Because that's not who you are. That's like a disease for the soul. But you're very comfortable with love, very comfortable with peace. Very comfortable with happiness, very comfortable with, you know, having the right kind of input of knowledge, it would be very good. But anger, irritation, jealousy, it's very uncomfortable. It's like something that you just don't want to go through it, but you go through it. So the normal temperature of the soul are these 7 qualities. Right? Then the question arises, if my original qualities are all this, every soul, whether the soul is in a prison, whether this person is out there a saint, but all everybody's original qualities are these. What happens really is the question here. Because when I see myself, I'm love and I'm peace and I'm happiness and I'm purity. This is no original quality. I don't experience it in certain circumstances and situations. It's like I my nature is only anger. So that's exactly why it's important that I ask myself, what makes a difference? Because we're all originally love, peace, happiness and everything. So what is the difference? I'll tell you. And after I mention this, I'll give you a meditation experience. Let's see, first thing is, within the soul, like how the body has these components, like we have these organs, we have lungs and kidneys and all that. In the same way, within the soul, there are 3 components. First, the mind. Second, the intellect. The third, the sanskaras. Sanskaras are, in other words, it's tendencies, habit patterns, personality traits, and so on and so forth. Mind is a thinking faculty. We're thinking all the time. There's not even a moment that we're not thinking. There's not even one moment that we're not thinking. We're thinking all the time. Even when we are sleeping, we are thinking. So it is like we see something and we think it's really happening. and we experience it in dreams because we are thinking. But there are about four varieties of thoughts in the mind that determines, you know, how we go about our life, whether we are happy or we are not happy, or we are heading towards something good or we're not. You know, it all depends upon the quality of our thoughts. So there are positive thoughts, the negative, the positive thoughts, you know what they are. Thinking good about everything around, appreciating, counting your blessings. Then negative thoughts, it's like giving up very quickly. This is how it is going to be. I know nothing good is going to happen. I know that. It's already giving up. And waste thoughts are something you can do nothing about, but you're thinking, why the coronavirus is there? Why should it be? It is there. Somebody was saying the other day, we have to get used to it, sister. We have to take care of ourselves and live with it and not count the time and day and everything. That's what I've come to a conclusion. I'm happier, you say. See, so waste thought, you can do nothing. You're not a part of the scientist team to create the vaccine and all that. There. Now what to do about ourselves and how to take care of ourselves. Waste thought, you can do nothing about it. What is going on? Fourth. Ordinary thoughts, like, you know, you take thoughts like, you know, I want to do this and I want to do that. You're planning your day. You don't increase or decrease energy. But in base thoughts, you decrease energy. Negative thoughts, you decrease. Immediately, you decrease energy. So much that, you know, even, you know, somebody was telling me, sister, I lose so much in my thoughts. I get lost in my thoughts in such a way that there's no energy in my body. I don't feel like going up and getting things done. I've lost enthusiasm because of these thoughts. 80% of our day goes in waste. Mostly thinking about things we can do nothing about. Nothing we can do. But we're thinking, why is he like that? Why is she like this? Why did it happen like that in the past? I shouldn't have done that. I should have done this. So all these different thoughts, you know, come in the category of waste. And this decreases energy gradually and 80% of the day goes in that. And negative thoughts immediately, but it's not like always we have negative thoughts. The more the negative thoughts, the more the depression, the more the waste thoughts, the more the anxiety. Right? So all these thoughts in the mind enter the intellect, the buddhi, that makes a decision. Should I do this? Should I not do this? Should I like it? Should I not like it? So the intellect decides. And whatever the quality of thoughts you send to the intellect, accordingly it gives you a decision. And so that you come into action. If your thoughts are all negative, the decision is also negative. Let us say you just gone to get together and we're sitting there. I'm just sitting there. And I look at somebody and I think, oh my God, look at the way he's standing. Huh? Well, this is not right the way he's standing. And then after a while he's sitting. Oh my, look at the way he's sitting. Oh my God, look at the way he's talking. Oh my God, look at the way he's eating. Oh my God, he has no manners. So everything I'll take into consideration and I don't like anything about him. And you're feeding this information to the intellect, these thoughts. The intellect has to make a decision now. The intellect says, I'm not going to, you know, talk to this person. Even if someone introduces that person to me, I'm going to ignore this person because I don't like this person. You've already decided. So when the person is being introduced, you ignore and you look away. This happened first time, the second time, third time, fourth time, another party, another get together, another place, another way. And everywhere you go, if this is the same thing, you don't like this person, you don't like that person, and so many attitude towards so many people. And eventually what happens is that, let us say this has been going on for a period of time. And now somebody comes up and says, hey, let's go. Let's have a new year, you know, some get together. Come on, let's go. I said, I'm not coming. What do you mean you're not coming? You don't want to come? No. Why? All are terrible people. All are terrible people. I don't want to interact with anybody. So you become very, very antisocial. You know, like, I don't want to mingle with anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to greet anybody. I don't want to do anything for anybody. So this becomes what you call as a sanskar. This is called a personality trait. When you keep repeating a particular action again and again and again, it becomes a habit pattern. And when it becomes a habit pattern, you can't just cut it off from your life. It's just a part of you. A part of your personality. And they are good sanskaras, they are bad sanskaras also. they're very good sanskar people, are very generous and very loving, and you know, they connect with people with a lot of respect. So there are a lot of good qualities also which are good sanskaras. Some we get from our parents, some we get from by practicing it, and some we get from the past. So these are the sanskaras which dominate the mind eventually. So when we say, I don't want to think like that, but these thoughts keep coming, it's because of a sanskar. The mind is controlled by a habit pattern. So we can't stop thinking. We can't stop thinking. We can't just say, I don't want to think like that. No, the thoughts will go with great force. Because the mind is not the problem, the sanskar is. Till that sanskar is not, it is there, I'm bound to be affected. I'm bound to get troubled. I'm bound to think in a certain way. Let us say there is a particular office and a department, and there is a boss. The boss comes and shouts at four people at the same time with the same intensity for the same reason. Would all four of them think in the same way when they're blasted in front of everyone? One person would think, he would think, what happened to him? He was fine till yesterday. What happened to him? He just comes and, you know, screams crazy and he's like that on his bucket. Let him say what he wants. I don't care. This is the first person is thinking like that. The second person is thinking, what does he think he is? Huh? Who does he think I am? Why do I have to put up with this nonsense? I'm going to quit this job today only. This is the second. Third, everything wrong happens to me only. I am the one who suffers and I have to go through all this. And I don't know why I'm so unlucky. And he can have a sleepless night and the same words what the boss had said is ringing in his mind all through the night. The fourth one is thinking, where did I go wrong? What was that mistake? How to rectify it? How not to do it again? So there's four people and four different types of thinking on the basis of their own sanskaras. So the problem, the thoughts are different because of a sanskar. So the whole aim of meditation is I need to relax. I don't want to, you know, bog down my intellect and mind with all these thoughts. What do I do? I have to change my sanskar system. How can we change a sanskar? That's a strong habit pattern. How do we do that? The thing is, our original quality is love, peace and happiness. You don't have to learn it. Somebody was telling, sister, in my whole life, I've never had a relaxed sleep, he said. I said, never, never, sister, never a relaxed sleep I've had. Very disturbed sleep I've always had. So I asked him, have you seen a baby like a 2-3 month old? Just, you know, just infant, you know, like how they sleep. Sister, yes, exactly. That is what I want to sleep at least once in my life. I said, brother, were you never a 3 month or a 2 month old? Were you never? He said, yes, sister, I was. So you must have slept like that, no? I said, yeah, you have to go back. Meditation is to go back to what you were. You're not going to go pick up peace from somewhere. That is who you are. The very first consciousness that we begin with this whole understanding of today, that I'm a soul, I start with that understanding and building my consciousness. I am a peaceful soul. I start from there. Three exercises. I'm a peaceful soul 7 times. At least 4 people you see them as souls. And give good wishes to everyone and then go to bed today. We want to give to the whole world, lovely, it is lovely, that's what we do. To the whole world, all those who are going through coronavirus, their relatives, their friends. You know, it's just not the person who's going to leave the body. The relatives are suffering, they can't even see them. And all the doctors who are just fighting it. And all those people in front line, for everybody who sent good wishes to them. It will be lovely because what you can wish for will reach them. It will protect them also. Sit back, relax yourself. Put all the weight on your feet. Collect all your thoughts gently. If your mind wanders somewhere, bring it back gently. and have this sweet conversation with yourself. I take out this time to talk to myself. I introduce this silence both around me and also within me. Around me, there are no sounds, and within me, there are not too many thoughts. I gently become aware that there is this being of light right behind my forehead, and that is who I truly am. And this light is a living being, and it is I, the soul, and I am the one who's giving life to this body. I'm an eternal, divine, life energy. I am a spiritual being, and I use this body to connect to the world. I watch the world through these eyes, I hear through these ears, and I speak through this mouth. I am a peaceful soul, a loveful soul, and a powerful soul. This is my original nature. And each and everyone around me are all souls. This abundant qualities and treasures which lay latent within me, and I take this moment to wake it and to bring it into my life. I bring into my awareness that I have immense strength and capabilities, and I'm originally very beautiful, rich in qualities. I am a soul. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Om Shanti.
Thank you, Sister Radhika, and I believe she has given a new introduction to ourselves, a new introduction to our real self, the introduction to the soul. Once we know our real identity, it becomes easier to connect to one's own self. And after all, we can only connect to those whom we know. Otherwise, there would be a disconnect. And I believe this first lesson of meditation would help you to connect with your own self. Thank you so much for joining in on the first day of the IT Wing Conference of the Brahma Kumaris. I sincerely hope that you enjoyed thoroughly everything that has been said today. Over the 3-day conference, we will explore more such interesting aspects. Thank you so much, and I will see you again tomorrow morning with more interesting topics and with amazing wisdom that is yet to flow. Take care and a good night.